Our special guest today is Hunter Lewis. He's the co-founder of the global investment firm Cambridge Associates. He's written 8 books on moral philosophy, psychology, economics, including the widely acclaimed Are the Rich Necessary? Mm-hmm. Believe it or not, the New York Times even gave it a thumbs up. Wow. And he's contributed to the New York Times, the Times of London, the Washington Post, the Atlantic Monthly, as well as numerous websites, including Forbes and RealCleanMarkets.com. He served on the boards of several committees and leading philanthropist organizations, including in sectors like the environment, teaching, research, cultural, and global development. But what I was excited about, Merlin, you know, this is an Austrian econ-friendly show, mm-hmm. and I found his writings through Mises.org. And I just finished reading 2 of his books, which are extremely well written. One is Free Prices, and the other is Crony Capitalism. So, Hunter, welcome to our show today.
It's good to be with you.
I want you to know you're on friendly grounds here. This is a Mises/Rothbardian friendly environment. There's just a handful of us left here in the United States, but I want you to know you're in friendly confines.
Well, it may be a handful, but I think it's growing.
It certainly is growing. Let's start with crony capitalism. I thought you laid out in an extremely readable way how crony capitalism has really touched every space, every sector, every crack and crevice of our wonderful country. But before we get into some of those, what is your definition of crony capitalism?
I would define it as the merger of big government, big business, big finance, big labor, big law, you know, all the bigs. They get together, they work out deals that benefit themselves at the expense of the public and the middle class, and especially the poor. And, of course, the crony capitalism is one side of the coin, but the other side of the coin is the bad economic policies that go along with it. Because mm-hmm. it's all part of the same parcel.
You know, and we've been talking about this in the show in the past, and one of the things that I was really bothered about, 60 Minutes did a piece a while back talking about how a lot of the senators, et cetera, were, in some cases, not letting bills pass because they weren't either informed early on enough so they could get a stake in the company or not getting anything out of it, so they would kind of vote a bill down. That kind of ties into this, right? They weren't the quote-unquote cronies, so they weren't going to pass these bills?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you know, and bills are held up until more campaign contributions come in. Or bills are engineered so that they have to be passed again in a year, or the regulations have to be written over a long, very long period of time so you can milk all the campaign contributions from it.
Well, Hunter, the problem is very visible. You know, I think I'm reminded by one of our instructors from Chicago that I believe it isn't just at the federal level we have crony capitalism. We have it at every level of government, from local to regional to state. Mm-hmm. I was reminded, I think it's either 3 or 4 governors of the state of Illinois have served prison terms.
That's absolutely right. I mean, we have it on all levels, but it's gotten a whole lot worse on the federal level in the last few years.
And it seems to be epidemic among both parties. There's just a handful of politicians, I guess we couldn't brand, as the enablers of crony capitalism, guys certainly like Ron Paul, but crony capitalism seems to be in every sector, every decade, and it just seems to be like a cancer and accelerates and grows. Is there anything we can do to stop crony capitalism?
Well, absolutely. First of all, I mean, Ron Paul isn't the only voice against crony capitalism, though, because, you know, you have his son Rand Paul in the Senate now, and you have other senators. I think it was very important that when the Janet Yellen was confirmed as the new chairman of the Federal Reserve Board, so many senators, mostly Republicans, but so many senators voted against her. And the Federal Reserve is financing the expansion of government into every nook and cranny of the economy, financing the expansion of government into, you know, every intricacy of the price system within the economy, and all of that helps to fuel the crony capitalism. So that if you can stop financing government to this degree, if you can do something about the deficit spending and the government borrowing from itself through the Federal Reserve, you can choke off the crony capitalism.
Well, that'll get us ultimately to your second book we'll get to after the break. But I notice in your chapter I was greatly alarmed in the agriculture industry. I grew up in the Midwest. As a matter of fact, a relative of mine that used to grow peanuts in South Georgia recently put her property into a bank of some kind sponsored by the Department of Agriculture, where they pay her not to grow peanuts. I was also alarmed to learn that we're still subsidizing the growing of tobacco in the United States with federal subsidies, when in fact it's estimated there's $100 billion of loss of productivity related to smoking-related illnesses. Where does this stop? I mean, at what point do we starve the beast?
Well, agriculture is one of those industries that is controlled by the federal government. And it's been controlled to some degree since the 30s, of course. But, again, it's more and more controlled. Everything happening in agriculture is really, enabled by Washington, approved by Washington. And, you know, one of the most insidious aspects of those contracts that you just described between the farmers and the federal government comes in and says, okay, you'll put your land in a bank or, some other arrangement where we'll pay you crop insurance. But then you sign an agreement, and when you look at the fine print of those agreements, it basically puts the government in charge of everything you do, and they can define everything in their own terms. I mean, every farmer in America could actually be put in jail for violating some fine print of the agreement they have with the government.
Crazy. One of the things that startles me, and actually I was a big fan of Facebook. I actually shut it off because I kept getting all these crazy messages and stuff. And one of the ones that seemed to be coming up, I would say 50% of the comments about politics was about Monsanto and the Monsanto quote-unquote protection act that Obama's kind of signed off on. From my perspective, it seems to me that Monsanto obviously has an unfair competitive advantage, and that puts a lot of these farmers either at risk if they're not using the Monsanto stock. I mean, would I be correct in that?
Yes. I mean, Monsanto is particularly insidious in the way they work with the government, and it goes throughout the government. When WikiLeaks, came out, we were seeing memos from embassies all over the world, promoting Monsanto products. Mm-hmm. And when you said the Monsanto Protection Act, maybe it's worth just taking a second. That was a provision slipped into a budget act. There was a piece of legislation to just keep the government going, continuing resolution. It was something that everybody had to vote for. They knew everybody had to vote for. And it said that Monsanto could not be stopped by the courts. So it was an unconstitutional provision. It was slipped into that bill with no notice and nobody's knowledge. Just an incredible example of crony capitalism at work.
Yeah, it sounds like one of the biggest. And I'm seeing things going on right now around the world, which I find very interesting, is countries that were kind of forced to use Monsanto seeds, et cetera. You're hearing about these mass burnings of crops as kind of a rebellion against this. Do you see that this is something that might actually happen in the States as well?
Well, perhaps. I'm sure that if there were burning of Monsanto crops, they would sue everybody involved. And again, they intimidate through legal means. They go to farmers and they say, if you oppose us or get in our way, we're going to sue you, and you can't afford to stand up against us. It'll cost you $1 million in court, and we've got all the money. Mm-hmm. It'll just be more of that.
Well, let's do this. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk more about crony capitalism, also pricing. Some very interesting statements with regards to pricing in his book called Free Prices, The Abolition of the Fed and Crony Capitalism. Our topic today is crony capitalism. So you have a question for Hunter Lewis or John O'Donnell or myself, you can power blast us out at powertradingradio.com. Also, if you are a social media holic, as many people are, you can go out to Twitter and send us comments through Twitter. My handle is at Trader Merlin. We also have a very special show today because it's Friday. It's our weekend edition, which means we're giving a free gold coin. If you have not entered our gold coin contest, you have until midnight tonight to do so. So get your bids in at powertradingradio.com. We'll be right back with Hunter Lewis after a short break.
Welcome back to Power Trading Radio Live and your host, Merlin Rothfeld, with today's special guest.
Welcome back to Power Trading Radio, everyone. Merlin Rothfeld and John O'Donnell. Tis our weekend edition show. Our guest today is Hunter Lewis, author of several books, and not just on crony capitalism, but much, much more. We'll talk about more of those books. We were just talking about the book on crony capitalism, which has a lot of very interesting topics. Of course, the Darth Vader of our current age, Monsanto. We talked a little bit about that. And right before we cut to a break, I had to interrupt John so we could cut to a commercial. So, John, where would you want to go?
Well, I thought in chapter 5 of your book, Hunter, you you started to take on, identify with great clarity the crony capitalism in our medical industry.
Mm.
When you look at our medical industry being somewhere north of 12, perhaps 15% of our GDP, the passing of Obamacare, give us your thumbnail version of, you know, how you see the crony capitalism profile rolling out as we start to deliver medical care.
Well, first of all, let's just consider how Obamacare came into being. The president invited all these special interests literally into the White House. The drug companies, the medical insurance companies, the medical equipment companies, the American Medical Association, and so on. And they, behind closed doors, with nobody in the room, you know, they worked out a deal. And we're only now finding out all the aspects of the deal. I mean, the fact that the deal added $2.28 to the minimum wage for every worker was something that was fairly clear from the beginning.
Yeah.
But, you know, people, for example, did not know that the government had agreed to pay for medical payments over a certain amount. I believe it's about $80,000. You know, in the new insurance policy. So the government is now sort of part of the payment scheme. But that was not clear at all. So a lot's still coming out.
Well, you mentioned that vaccines are a crony capitalist dream project. What do you mean by specifically vaccines being a dream environment for the crony capitalistic way of life?
Well, they are, because the government in many cases develops the original idea for the vaccine, then they license it to the drug company, then they give money to the drug company to develop it, and they may provide money for the manufacturer of the vaccine. Then, of course, the same government that's done all this then approves the vaccine, designs the test to see whether it's safe, decides, yes, it is safe. And then, of course, the state governments are advised by the same federal government to make it mandatory.
Wow.
Crazy.
It's a pretty scary situation. It's such a tremendous conflict of interest. And, you know, our kids are at risk from it. I mean, the government... If the government's going to mandate vaccines, they've got to get out of the production of them.
Yeah. Well, we can't leave our friends out, of course, at Goldman Sachs. Your book, you call names in that particular chapter. I don't think we have to go into a lot of detail, but the financial industry is just, we saw it with 9/11, we saw it with TARP, we saw it with QE.
We saw it with Paulson as our Secretary of the Treasury.
I mean, I find not only Paulson, but Bernanke telling us that the subprime mess was contained. They either lied to us or they misassessed the risk. Are we ever going to have, is too big to fail still alive, or can we cut the head off that snake?
Well, I mean, but one thing that isn't so well, I mean, there are a lot of things that aren't well understood at all, and maybe I'll digress for a moment just to say that, you know, Goldman Sachs in particular, and during the crash, they were given access to the Federal Reserve's loan window, so they can get money from the government just newly printed at virtually no interest charge to themselves. So that they have a very sweet deal, and that has continued. So, you know, that's in itself, you know, pretty damning, but what people also don't realize is that the so-called bailout of Wall Street was really a bailout of Washington as well. I think one of the main things the Federal Reserve was worrying about was that there wouldn't be any buyers for U.S. Treasury bonds.
Yes.
And the way it works is, you know, the U.S. government issues those bonds. They're bought by Wall Street banks. Then the Federal Reserve buys them back from the Wall Street bank. It's illegal for the government, for the Federal Reserve, to buy bonds directly from the Treasury, but they do it indirectly through Wall Street. So they had to keep all that going. So it's not just a problem in Wall Street. It's a larger problem.
Yeah, and we now have more concentrated of risk. I believe we've never had more concentrated deposits under FDIC insurance isolated in a fewer hands banks than we have today. I mean, things have really been concentrated. And so since 9/11, or the 2008 meltdown, the risk has been increased. It's not, we haven't solved the problem.
Yes, and they also talked about doing something about the risk from derivative contracts, which, you know, sort of Warren Buffett referred to as a kind of a nuclear financial threat but they haven't done anything about that. They haven't set up any clearing exchanges for derivatives, and the amount of derivatives is just enormous. I mean, trillions and trillions of dollars in those same banks, and it was derivatives that helped blow up Lehman Brothers.
Sure, and not only Lehman, but many other financial firms as well.
Well, as the founder of Cambridge Associates, I'm sure your firm has positions in multiple equities and bond and credit instrument yourself, but what do you see for the financial services industry going forward? Is Dodd-Frank going to limit their revenue potential?
You just say that Cambridge Associates actually doesn't have these positions. We're strictly an advisor.
Okay.
And we really were set up years and years ago when we first started to avoid all these Wall Street conflicts of interest, which we've succeeded in doing. Mm-hmm. So we're really not like the other Wall Street firms. But what you really need to do is to separate finance from government. As long as there's a marriage of Wall Street and Washington, it's going to be run in a way which, just for the short term, seems to serve Washington's interests or Wall Street's interests. But in the long run, it's just going to make everything worse for everybody, including Wall Street and Washington.
Well, what about the opportunity?
I was going to cut John off before we dive into that one because we got to take a commercial break here. Our guest today is Hunter Lewis. We've been talking about crony capitalism in America. Some great stuff in there. Obviously, I haven't had a chance to read it. John can't rave about it enough. You can find that out at Amazon.com. Type in Hunter Lewis or crony capitalism in America. Get the copy of that. When we come back, we'll talk about free prices and also maybe dive a little bit deeper into what might be some of the remedies here. If you're like myself, you're probably fairly mad as hell that this system is going on like this. It seems to me that our whole political system is bought. It used to be that we're run by the government. It seems now run by corporations. What steps can we take to help facilitate change out there? We'll look at that when we come back after a quick break. If you have questions for Hunter Lewis, John O'Donnell, or myself, you can power blast us out at powertradingradio.com. We'll be here for a few more segments. And also, don't forget to get your bids in for our gold coin contest. Coming up a little bit later on in the program, we'll announce our latest winner. I'll give you a big hint. It's a repeat winner. So you want another gold coin. We'll tell you who that is just a little bit later on. We'll be right back after the short time.
You've been listening to Power Trading Radio, live, fueled by Online Trading Academy. To learn more, visit us online at powertradingradio.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Power Trading Radio. I'm Merlin Rothwell with you for your weekend edition, also with the Ambassador of Opportunity, John O'Donnell, and a very special guest, Hunter Lewis. We've been talking about crony capitalism. If you had maybe some feelings that our government and corporations were a bit corrupt, read some of these books and get some real insights into how actually corrupt it is. We've been taught the first book was Crony Capitalism. The second one we're going to look at, which is Free Prices Now, Fixing the Economy by Abolishing the Fed, a topic that John is definitely a fan of, and a lot of our guests have been a fan of abolishing the Fed. So, Hunter, tell us a little bit about fixing prices now. What can we expect through that read?
But before we get into the Fed and prices, I wonder if we could just go back for a second to a very interesting point you raised right before the break, which is, are we run by big corporations? Because I think it's important to remember that it isn't just big corporations. It's also big labor, the public labor unions in particular, big law. So it's a lot of different special interests.
And you have a bit of that in crony capitalism. You have a whole section on crony labor,
And then the other question is, are they running the government, or is the government running them? You see, because it really flows both ways.
Yeah.
It goes both ways. I mean, the government wants campaign contributions, the government wants electoral support, and so on. And those special interests want special favors at the expense of the public.
They're enabling each other.
Sure, absolutely.
Right.
I don't know if you saw it the other day, but Dylan Radigan's got a show. I forget what network it's on, but the clip was going around where he just goes on a tirade about how do people not realize that our politicians are bought. The whole thing is bought. And you're right. It's one feeding the other. They're buying the politicians to get the pieces done that they need done. And I don't see a win-win scenario here for the American people. It seems like a loss-loss scenario as assets and money and jobs seem to be pilfered through the system.
And then the other thing to keep in mind is that we often think that, big business supports Republicans and labor supports Democrats, but it doesn't always work that way. So that, for example, in the fiscal cliff bill about a year or so ago, when President Obama raised taxes on the so-called rich, he snuck in a provision lowering taxes on his favorite corporations, people like the film industry, and those tax reductions in those corporations actually completely offset the additional tax revenue from the rich from the bill. And then remarkably, as he signs the bill, he says, this is just the beginning of the reform we need, even though he used that bill for crony capitalist purposes.
Well, what about the role of term limits? Can we get aggressive in coming forward and limiting term limits? Or is it just going to accelerate the turnstile of the politicians where they go out and become professional lobbyists?
No, I think term limits, you know, have a place. But I mean, going back to the question of what do we do about this, there are two ways to approach it. One way is through the voting booth, and the key to that is young people. We really have to make young people aware of this problem. Young people are really the swing element in the vote today, especially in the presidential level. Whichever candidate they go for is going to win. And, of course, that will become even more true with the passage of time by definition. But even today, that's true. If young people, for example, had just voted evenly between Romney and Obama, then Romney actually would have won. So they really are the swing element, and they just don't understand not only what's going on, but also that they're really kicking in the ear. They're bearing the brunt of all this because they're not aware. The young people don't understand that all this unemployment that they're suffering is a reflection of the crony capitalism. They don't understand that the overtime rules that make it hard for them to get a job, you know, are coming out of that. They don't understand that the student loans are working against them because they're just subsidizing universities that keep raising tuitions. They don't understand that Obamacare is making it harder to get a job. They don't understand that Obamacare is penalizing them relative to older people. You know, all of these things that young people don't understand.
And they don't understand that raising the minimum wage is going to create no jobs for them.
Right.
And, well, you know what they do understand? They do understand that Kim Kardashian got some lip injections and that she has a new baby, North by Northwest, I think is that kid's name. And they do know that Kanye West is a horrible dresser and a terrible person. But nothing that really matters with regards to steering our country in the right direction. Hopefully we can make some awareness on this program and others. We're going to take a quick break. We wanted to get into this book called Free Prices, the Abolition of the Fed, which is something we're all interested in. We'll get to that after we come back after a short break with Hunter Lewis on PowerTradingRadio.com. We'll be right back. Welcome back to our weekend edition of Power Trading Radio. John O'Donnell in with Merlin Rothfeld and our guest, Hunter Lewis. We've been talking about crony capitalism for quite a bit. One of the books we wanted to get to was Free Prices, Abolition of the Fed. An interesting topic, something that, you know, I don't know from my limited experience what that might impact in the markets. But, John, you read through the book.
Well, let me tell you something about this particular book. What got me started on the Austrian perspective years ago was not only meeting Murray Rothbard, but reading Henry Hazlitt's book, Economics, the One Easy Lesson. And I would have said if any of our listeners should read at least one book on this topic, it would be Hazlitt's book. I now have added to that list Hunter Lewis's book, Free Prices, Let's Abolish the Fed. Hunter, you did a terrific job of outlining step by step the arguments of Keynes, Marx, Mises, Rothbard, Hayek. You laid it, Hazlitt, you laid it down in a very a writing style that is very lucid. And it really speaks to the layman to understand what the debate is. I don't think, in my mind, after reading your treaty on this, I don't think there should be a debate on whether we end the Fed or not. We need to abolish the Fed. Can you shed, your light on this for our audience?
Well, it's absolutely critical that we abolish the Fed in order to get rid of the crony capitalism. They're closely linked. We have to remember that we haven't had a Fed for most of American history. We did very well without it. And an earlier version of the Fed was closed down by Andrew Jackson precisely for this reason. He said it was causing all this crony capitalism and corruption, and he wanted to get rid of it for that very reason. The reason it's so important to get rid of the crony capitalism is that the Fed is financing the government's getting into every nook and cranny of the economy. That's a very expensive process. The government can't do that for free. They need a lot of money in order to control more and more and more of the economy. You know, look at Obamacare, look at all these things. They all cost a lot of money. And where does the government get the money? You know, they get some of it from taxes, but as we know, they borrow more of it, and they also just borrow from themselves. And in fact, they print the money they use themselves working indirectly through Wall Street. All of that is facilitated and made possible by the Federal Reserve. If you got rid of the Federal Reserve, it couldn't happen anymore. The government would have to be smaller. The government couldn't be in every nook and cranny of the economy. And then the special interests wouldn't have any reason to try to buy government. The whole process is government gets into everything, and then special interests, either for their own reasons or in defense, go to Washington to try to buy what's going on there. A good example is Apple Computer right now. Mm-hmm. Apple Computer, tried to be innocent of this process. They refused to spend much money in Washington lobbying or make many campaign contributions and things like that. So they got hit with an antitrust case, and now they've got somebody appointed by the judge inside the company who's going to be telling them what prices to set, which could destroy Apple Computer. So you can be sure that Apple from now on will be spending a whole lot of money on lobbying and campaign contributions.
Disturbing.
Are you encouraged or discouraged by the development of Bitcoin as a potential alternative source to be a medium of exchange?
Well, I think it's interesting and it's useful insofar as it shakes things up and it makes people think about monetary systems. But because it's not a system that's based on anything tangible and real, it doesn't really have any future. And ultimately, what we would do better with would be the private market creating money, but that money I expect would be backed by gold, maybe silver, but something tangible, so that people knew what they were getting.
Yeah, well, Mises wrote on this extensively, as did Menger, and made it very, very clear under Austrian economic principles that we need sound money back with something like gold and silver that has withstood the test of time, that in fact a lot of people don't realize was created by the free market. The invention of money did not come from government. I'm alarmed at the number of people we run into in the general public that have no idea of the history and evolution of how our money has changed from 5,000 years ago.
Well, and also how it changed since the creation of the Federal Reserve 100 years ago. At that time, one of the senators said, I'm going to put in the bill a requirement that money be backed by gold, and he was talked out of it because everybody said, you'll never have money backed by nothing. That's inconceivable. You don't need it in the bill.
Faith. Let's just do it on faith, right?
Well, look what happened. Hunter, I want to thank you very much for being with us and sharing your wisdom, and thank you so much for writing these books. I can't endorse them enough. Merlin, let's go to Amazon, put those up. We encourage our listeners to get Free Prices and Crony Capitalism by Hunter Lewis. You can go to Amazon.com. That's probably the most efficient way. They're both in physical form and ebook form. I promise you it is a great read. There's another great read that I'm going to finish this weekend. It's Where Keynes Went Wrong and Why World Government Keeps Creating Inflation, Bubbles, and Bursts. You've done a great service, and you are a gifted man to write with such clarity for mere mortals like Merlin and I when it comes to economic thought.
Well, thank you, and it's been a real pleasure to be with you.
Thank you. Good luck to you, sir. God bless you.